Perfume Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 69th edition of Festival di Cannes. Today I have with me Pablo Larraín, who's here to present his new film in competition at the Contenders Theatre, Neruda. Pablo, it's like you reinvented the genre. It's not a biopic, it's not only about Neruda's literature.
It's a very literary film. I mean, it's a literary creamy, in fact. Like you invent reinvent the genre, in fact.
We tried to do a movie more than about Neruda himself, but about what we say in Spanish, lo nerudiano, the Nerudian world. Neruda was a man who was a great cook, and he loved food, and he loved wine, he loved women. He was a collector. He would travel all over the world, and he would bring all kind of people, had all kind of collections of things, and he was of course a great reader. He was fascinated by crime stories, and he had multiple houses in different places of Chile, and every house is today is a museum, but it's a spectacle, you know, the collection he had from, I don't know how you say, mascarón de proa, you know, these wood things that they would put on top of the ships, you know, the sirens or whatever. So he had multiple of those, and so he had a whole world around him. He created like a cosmic vision, so that's where we sort of stick to, more than his figure. And so we made a game. We made a game, and we play with his figure. And that's where all the literary comes in, you know. It's dedicated to, I think, to try to approach to a poet and deal with poetry in film. Because poetry is the very few things that you cannot explain. You have to read it. I mean, it's like being a father. Like, if you don't have a children, how do you explain that? So that was one of the problems that we faced at the beginning when we decided to make this movie. How do we get in there, you know? And we decided to make this this game and to create two characters that are basically one.
Why this particular moment in Neruda's life, and why did you decide to set this period and have this period defined by this chase?
Well, because, you know, we start from there, the comments were declared illegal, and he was a fugitive from justice, and he escaped for 2 years. And he moved from places to places. And while doing that, he wrote in my opinion, but you could have multiple opinions on this, but probably the book that gave him, you know, the Nobel Award later, and it's a very thick, wonderful book called El Canto General, and that book it's a book that he wrote while he was escaping, and I believe that somehow he shaped his own legend in this period. So we thought it was important to go there, and also because Neruda is very well known by his love poems all over the world, but I think that the poems that are really important are those poems that are full of rage and passion and politics. He was able to blend and combine politics and poetry. Okay. Could you imagine, like, somebody today writing poetry and like talking good things about a candidate and bullshit about another one? In a poetic context, like, people would laugh, I guess. I don't know. It would have to be really good, you know. But that's what he did. So it was. But yeah, and so, and then when he got the Nobel Award, I think it was 1970. In his speech that you can read, it's everywhere. He refers to this moment of his life extensively. He talks about this, and he does it in two ways. He says that he learned about fraternity because he was held by people that he didn't know. So so when he read his speech in Norway, when he got in the Nobel Award, he refers to this period of his life. And he does something very beautiful, that he tells a story, and then at the end he says, I don't know if I imagined this, if I dreamt it, or if I wrote it. Anyway, it was fantastic. So that's the key of you know, someone who is like writing his own destiny, you know, and dealing with fiction and poetry. But yeah, I think it's a key moment, especially because it's possible to say and to think that he somehow designed and built his own legend and his own myth. I think somehow every great artist deals with his own image in public and is worried about it and is able to shape it, you know. Especially back then. Today's harder because they'll grab you with microphones, cameras, and you know, it's different. But those guys, Picasso, you know, all the painters, the writers from the 19th century and the 20th century, were people that had a lot of conscience in terms of what to say, how to do it. There are very few recordings of Neruda. Like, we barely couldn't find it. It's like there's almost nothing. And the ones there are is him reading his own poetry with a very poet voice. And it's funny, you can Google, it's a conversation between Gabriel García Márquez and Pablo Neruda that was shot on film, I think in La Habana, I don't know when. And they're both like sitting, and it's like, and it's an interview that García Márquez does to Neruda. So it's like, Mr. Neruda, and super slow, could you please tell us about it? Of course, Mr. García Márquez. And he was like, he's like, you're kidding me? And I think, so they really were very concerned about whatever comes out of their personality because they were shaping it and they were very worried about it, you know? So it's interesting.
Neruda is a very challenging character when it comes to research on how he really was, right?
You can't put him in a box. You can't put it in a movie. It's impossible. I mean, I read multiple biographies. I read his own autobiography. I read his work. I did a long research for years. I did the movie. And now, today, I can tell you that, like, I look at this name and I don't know exactly who that guy was. It's like water. You just put it in your hand, but it would go away, you know. But your hands will stay wet. You will keep with something that you can't describe. It's like a ghost. It's impossible to grab. And when you assume that, then you work with more freedom, you know. And then you are able to play because you will never get him, you know. And it's fascinating that it's like that. So. We always say that we made this movie thinking that maybe he would like to see it and he would have fun, you know, seeing it, knowing that it's not necessarily him, but it's just a play around him, you know. Otherwise, the biopics are so boring, you know. Most of biopics are super boring. Because what happens is that, a lot of biopics, they focus so much in to have the actor that they look like, they talk like, as a singer that sings like, and they work so hard on it, and then they make it, they get it. Sometimes you can really, you know, there are movies that really achieve that, but then that's the movie, you know. All you see is a guy is just like the real person that does exactly whatever he does, but tell me a story, man. And then the story is usually boring or whatever because they just focus on that, you know. And well, we tried to make him look like Neruda. We put him a wig, and he's a great performer, and he could talk like him. And of course, we did the job, you know. But it was not the essential thing. I was not obsessed with it. And Oscar Peruchonot, the Gael's character, actually existed. It was a cop with that name that chased him. But it was another guy with another life, and you know, just like the name, and we use it, but. Again, this is the same. It's like, I don't know. You know, I don't think he was son of a hooker. You know, I have no idea. You know.
What this with Neruda, different process in the way you approach this film compared to what you did with El Club, for example?
What happens is that we didn't know, and then my next movie was going to be Neruda, and then it was a 5-country co-production. It was huge in terms of locations, a very long shot, it was an expensive movie for our reality. So it took a while to put together everybody, like the schedules for the actors. So we were going to shoot in September, and then we moved it to the next year. And I was like unemployed, you know, and we made the club like out of nowhere, waiting for this movie. And so yeah, and they're very different movies, and on every level, I think. Mm-hmm. But so it's hard to compare them. Yeah.
In terms of cinematography, it's since it's a period piece, which choices seem appropriate for you?
Well, we work with some codes. We use back projections. We use the matte paintings in the background, and yeah, we tried to make a movie that it was like it could have been shot in those days, you know. And but it's complicated, you know, when you fill a form for a festival like this. So there's like a form, right? You have to fill it up on internet. So it goes name, title, running time, whatever, and sound, Dolby, whatever, and then color, whatever, and then it goes genre. And then somebody from the office called me and said, "What do I put here? Just don't put nothing. Just leave it in blank." I can't do it because, you know, when you put submit, it needs to fill that space. So we called the festival and said, "We're not. How do we do this?" And they did it by hand. I don't know, because I couldn't, and I love that, but I couldn't know if this is a comedy, a drama. It has elements from noir movies, from westerns, from thrillers. It's a little bit of everything, and that's where the Nerudian issue comes again. I tried to make a movie that is hard to put into a box. You know, try it. I don't know if it worked, but that was the intention, you know.
Talking about this very thin distinction between imagination and reality in the film, how did you work on that when directing the actors? How did you communicate all these things, this idea that you had in mind, to your actors?
Well, I didn't. Because it's not on their field, because that's something that we do. It's on the way you shape the story. I mean, of course, we talk about it. It's not that I hide them. No. But they have to play it in the way they play it, more sort of natural and with logic. And then in the editing room, we cut it. What was weird for them is that we repeat the scenes in multiple locations. You can tell that, but that, you know, we would make a scene, a specific dialogue and an action in one place, and they will move and go to another place and do it again, and they would move and go to a third place and do it again. And that was confusing for them, because, and I tried it just to change the background for rhythm, for atmosphere, for tone. But that's something that you create and when you edit the movie, basically. And then we were shooting, and I asked to the writer some things, and then Gael would go to his trailer, and we would record the voiceover just to be able to edit. And he was like, "What is this?" Like, no, I'll tell you later. No, I just read it. So then he understood that we were like dealing with all the things that, because the soul of this movie was discovered later, was discovered when we were about to start shooting, then we were shooting, and then in the editing room, you know, and we found codes and we reshaped it, and I like that. I like to see cinema as a fabricated accident, you know, that you fabricate something that at some point it won't be in your control.
Didn't you panic then? I mean, not knowing if everything came out the way you were hoping for and relying on the editing process.
Yeah, I used to have a lot of panic in previous movies, but now I understood it. and I enjoy it a lot. I enjoy the fact that I'm going to be involved in a movie that is going to have an unknown direction. And it's fascinating. It could be very frightening, but then if you start to enjoy it, it's nice. It's like you go to a party and you don't know who's going to be there. And you find people and
what's your relationship with your audience? So far, all your films, including this one, had a lot of success, a lot of approval. So does this approval affect you? And well, now that you're,
well, it depends on the movie. It depends. Of course, I think about the movie, but it depends on the movie. But because, for example, in The Club, it's a movie that I did with my own ghost somehow, and it's a more contained movie. So it, for me, it's I felt more protected somehow because it's a movie that I knew that it wasn't going to be like for a super large audience, but it would work in what it was. Not I knew, but I felt a little bit more confident. In here, I intended to make a movie more open for a larger audience, you know, for a wider audience. And when you do that, it's very scary because it's like you don't know, there's like a void, you know, you don't know where it's going to go, who's going to, if it's going to work or not, and it's like it's unknown. But you do it, thinking on the audience, yeah, thinking on the rhythm, because I think a movie that works for the audience has to be magnetic somehow. And I tried hard with Hervé Schnee, the editor, to keep that, you know, don't let it go, you know, keep the tone, keep the rhythm, keep the magnetism, so in all the way until the end.
Thank you, Pablo Larraín, for being here with us with Neruda in the Cantanerella Theatre at the 69th edition of Festival de Cannes. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.